From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, Planet X, the sign of the Son of Man. Get ready for that. Here's what's happening. Well, a few hours ago, one of my sources sent me a very special email and said something big is going to happen Friday in Iran. Let me tell you the story first. Not many people know about it. This year has seen many uprisings by the people in countries like Egypt, Syria, Tunisia, and Libya, bent on overthrowing mostly tyrannical regimes. But this has not happened in Iran yet. The destabilization of the current regime in Iran could spell a whole new era of economic growth and peace in the Middle East if it were to be successful. But most see the only solution as open war against Iran. But a similar mass uprising of the people against the mullahs in Tehran, as seen in Egypt and elsewhere, may take place September 23rd, this Friday, at 7 p.m. Iranian time, which is 8:30 a.m. Friday morning Pacific time. So keep your eyes on this. Hossein Hejazi has worked in the media and has been invited to take part in many radio shows. We turn to him for his expertise in Iran. Hossein, have you heard about this story yet?
Good evening, Mr. Nouri. Yes, I have heard about two different uprising invitation. One from here in United States, a group of former Army generals and Air Force generals who have been started a campaign a while ago asking Iranian people to come out of their homes with a silent demonstration, peaceful demonstration. And also, the more important thing that I have heard just today and within next last few days is about the invitation of a student of one of the biggest universities in Iran, Islamic Azad University, or kind of open university or free university in Tehran, who has invited the people, all the students, to come for a silent and peaceful demonstration to occupy a large portion of Iranian main streets, Tehran main street. And just today, the student of the Faculty of Engineering in Tehran University has joined them.
This could be millions of people, Hussein.
Yes, and as you know, Mr. Nouri, this started, this uprising, as a matter of fact, last year when 3 million people poured in the street with that election situation 2 years ago. And unfortunately, with the brutality of the regime, they just temporarily can succeed to put it down.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. In this case, if there is a peaceful demonstration on Friday, yes, Friday night in Iran,
yes,
what will the mullahs do? Will they let it happen, or will they turn the troops loose?
Definitely, there should be we are going to be expecting a big reaction crackdown from the government of Iran and mullahs. But how far they can go, and how, if the population and the crowd that comes out are in millions, definitely they are going to be overwhelmed. And this is a hope that many, many Iranian are looking for, and they are hoping that it happens that way.
Right now, the people that live in Iran generally, are they unhappy?
Mostly. A big majority, maybe 20 to 30% of them are the people who, with the bribes that the government gives them, and these are usually the lower-income family that with this new money that they are giving them based on the number of the people in every household, they give them like $40 a month, which is a lot of money for those kind of low-income people. And they have succeeded to silence them and make them to the supporters of this regime. But these are no more than 30%, according to all the numbers that we are hearing from Iran. And it's not that stable. I mean, these people can turn very easily toward the opposition people.
All right. You keep an eye on this for us, Hussein. Like I reported, one of my sources sent me a little note that said, keep your eyes on this one. Friday night in Iran, September 23rd, that there's going to be millions in the streets starting to protest as the Arab Spring had occurred in a number of other Middle Eastern countries. That's 8:30 a.m. Friday morning, Pacific time. Let's see if my source is correct. Let's see if Hossein Hajjazi's sources are correct. A group of Italian scientists have gone on trial for failing to predict an earthquake that killed more than 300 people in central Italy in 2009, despite signs of increased seismic activity in the area. The seven defendants, six scientists, and one government official are accused of manslaughter in a case that some see as unfair to science. The defendants were members of a panel that had met 6 days before the April 6th quake to assess risks after hundreds of tremors had shaken the city there. Calori, of course, has written a number of books and articles, and also The Man Who Predicts Earthquakes about Jim Berkland. Cal, this is a bizarre story, isn't it?
That's exactly what I wrote. I wrote a strange twist when I heard it on CNN yesterday. My mouth dropped. You know, there was actually an Italian researcher that did predict the April 6th quake, and he based it on the emissions of the radon gas coming up from the ground. But the mayor, he forced this researcher to take off his warnings, to remove them from the internet. They didn't go there. So there's a catch-22 here. I mean, we had one researcher predicting it. They silenced them, and now they're sending seven, you know, one official and seven scientists, or six scientists up for manslaughter. It's absurd.
Can you imagine the USGS doing that to earthquake predictors here? It just doesn't make any sense.
Well, the USGS, I've, you know, interviewed a lot of scientists there, and of course they don't believe in prediction. And I have to say, it is not 100% accurate. You know, I've predicted quakes through my, you know, being intuitive. Jim Berkland, the geologist, he's predicted quakes like, the, you know, the 1989 spot on. He had so much data. It can be done. But short seismic windows, I'm starting to be very much against them. Like, you know, saying tomorrow LA is going to get slammed with a 9.0. I don't like having that on my earthquake epicenter forum. It just, it creates panic and chaos. And that can be more dangerous than the quake itself sometimes. And that's what the USGS scientists told me all these years when I did the research. And now I'm starting to believe it. I believe in earthquake prediction, but I believe in longer windows so people can prepare more calmly rather than, you know, how would you feel right now if I told you that where you're at, you're going to get hit by an 8.0 tomorrow? I mean, if you believe me, you would freak.
Off to St. Louis for me then, Cal.
Yeah, well, you could have a heart
attack. Of course, I could have one there, too.
I know, but you see.
Yeah, I mean, you do. You literally drive people crazy with those kind of predictions. But in this case, group of Italian scientists going on trial for manslaughter for failing to predict an earthquake. Many early bird species suffered from the same catastrophic extinction as the dinosaurs, according to new research. The meteorite impact that coincided with the disappearance of the dinosaurs 65 million years ago also saw a rapid decline in primitive bird species. They say only a few bird groups survived the mass extinction from which then all modern birds are descended. The story we continue to follow, the defunct NASA satellite is going to crash to Earth this Friday. It is going to break up, they think, into 26 little pieces, about 1,100 pounds. Where they all hit, nobody knows. Maybe our science advisor and head of the EnterpriseMission.com, Richard C. Hoagland, does. What's going to happen?
There are eerie parallels between this NASA prediction and what's going on in Italy in this previous story. Because one of the main reasons that, you know, a number of us think that NASA's made this prediction about the reentry of the satellite over which they can do nothing is because if they didn't tell everybody it was coming down and it hit somebody, then they would be liable, at least in terms of public relations. So what's going on in Italy is having a very interesting effect even here. Now, realistically, this thing is orbiting at an inclination of 57 degrees to the equator, meaning that in its 1 hour, 90 minute orbit, every 90 minutes, it covers a swath of territory, and then the Earth rotates under it continuously, and then it comes around again, and it moves to the west, and it covers the same swath of territory, and it does this over and over and over again. So in about a day and a half, it covers the entire Earth, mainly between the latitudes where most of the 6 billion people, 7 billion, that live on Earth now happen to live. So the odds are it could fall anywhere on Earth where most people are living, right?
Well, they say 1 in 3,200 chance. You know, that's kind of high to me.
Well, what they've done is they've narrowed it down in that it will most likely fall over the ocean, because oceans are most of the area between 57 North and 57 South. They've taken a worst-case scenario, like, you know, Tokyo, Los Angeles, some really dense city, New Delhi, and they've calculated that the odds are 1 in 3,200 that any person will be hit. That's not any particular person. George, in other words, if we were to try to calculate the odds that you would be hit, you're totally safe. It's millions and millions and millions to one, because there's 7 billion people living between those latitudes.
That's right.
And the worst-case scenario. So this should not be looked at fearfully. It could be rather interesting if it occurs overnight. It'll be spectacular reentry. Most likely it will enter over some part of the Earth that no one has ever been to, is ever living in, is not on a boat on at the moment, et cetera, et cetera. But if it does enter over some inhabited territory, even in broad daylight, some of these pieces reentering at 17,500 miles an hour will glow bright enough they'll be brighter than the sun. And we base that on the Skylab experience back in the 70s over the outback of Australia. Bottom line, there's really nothing to worry about. You have much greater odds that Elenine, you like how I segue into this? Elenine is artificial than you're going to get by the satellite.
We shall see. And Richard, I'm going to see you Friday night as I'm introducing you and a number of speakers at the Awaken Aware Conference in Irvine, California. I'll be on assignment that night with you. Federal prosecutors accused executives at the online site Full Tilt Poker of operating a Ponzi scheme, siphoning more than $440 million in gamblers' winnings to board members and owners. In Greenbelt, Maryland, a businessman has pleaded guilty to rigging payphones that he owned to robotically call toll-free numbers repeatedly so he could collect the 50-cent fee owed for each call, illegally racking up $4 million. Up next, we're going to be talking with the co-executive producer of the program Quantum Leap, Deborah Pratt, back on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to talk about consciousness. Stand by. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Deborah Pratt is a veteran of the entertainment industry. She's a dancer, singer, actress, and she became the co-executive producer and head writer of Quantum Leap, starring Scott Bakula, Dean Stockwell. Deborah, of course, is the author of the internationally acclaimed sci-fi trilogy, The Vision Quest. I ran into her a couple months ago in L.A. You caught me singing that night, didn't you?
I absolutely did, and I was impressed, George.
Well, I only know two songs, Deborah, so it's one of those. How have you been?
I've been very, very well, thank you, and yourself?
Good. Did you have fun doing Quantum Leap?
It was a great show. I mean, it was like you. You know, it was a family of people who got together. We got to really explore a series that was so unique on television, and the fans still, to this day, love us.
What made that show so magical?
I think the characters, truthfully, Scott Bakula and Dean Stockwell were incredible and had great chemistry, but the character Sam Beckett was a true hero. And the idea that somebody could step into your life and make right what once went wrong, make a difference in your life, I think he gave people hope. And Al was truly the ultimate observer that quantum physicists always talk about. And together they just kind of created this space, and in it they healed the past and they made a better future. It was a cool show.
Were you a believer in time travel and, you know, going through portals and quantum leaps before you got involved in this?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've been spiritual as well as a fan of great science fiction, but I had an early understanding. I think that we perceive the world through filtered lenses, and And the idea that we could accept realities existing, multiple realities existing simultaneously, was just something that I got. I really felt that the human mind was capable. You know, we talk about we only use 5 or 7% of the human mind. And the fact that we had these great teachers who could guide us, and we've just kind of forgotten the mysteries. And that's one of the reasons that I started writing in the first place. But we have, I believe, the ability to manifest anything. And why couldn't we be able to shift out of one reality into another?
Absolutely.
Says we're not traveling right now.
No, we should be. You just released a third installment of the trilogy, The Vision Quest. Tell me about this, Vision Quest.
Earth in the not-too-distant future, all the great Aquarian linings have happened. The great shift has occurred. The planet as we know it has changed, but we're living with the science and technology that we've created today because I wanted to ground it. It's not a galaxy far, far away. And the fact that we're crossing our genetics with animals and plants, we are creating alternate species. And in the book, these part human species discover their humanity, and it's so new to them, they remember all the powers that we forgot, and they start to teach them back to us. And then we're also placing our genetics into machines, and it's inevitable. They become sentient, and in the story, they demand their place and then realize there's no place for humans. But the story is told through the eyes of a young hero, Cole Lazerman, and it's a coming of age. But I feel like we're in a coming of age right now. We're coming into this age of light. And his journey is to remember the forgotten powers of humanity, save himself from his own negative emotions, and help the planet join together so we can save ourselves.
Well, that's the way to do it. And you've done switching of some gears a little bit, too, because you've got a book coming out called Visionary Being One that deals with, what, the collective consciousness?
Yes. Absolutely. I mean, what happened was I wrote all of this into the Vision Quest. And then suddenly, George, I was getting these incredible letters from people saying, you've changed my life. You've opened my mind to, you know, let go of the past. Tell me more. And so I started to explore this whole philosophy behind the book. And in that philosophy and in the comments that people were writing to me, I realized that we are in a shift, and there's so many people out there that are just hungry to know what's coming. And the feeling that I really have and the vision that I got for this project was it's up to us. If we stand in hatred and anger and hostility, we can really create a negative, horrible future for ourselves, which we've done pretty well for the past 10,000 years.
Well, there's no doubt. You know, we've done, Deborah, on this program some experiments with the collective consciousness.
Yeah, you have.
And, you know, I've got to say, in my opinion, they've worked. Sometimes a little bit more than I thought. You know, when you want some place to be, you know, deluged with rain, I didn't expect the flood from Noah. You know, it's one of those things where it's not quite controllable, but I do believe it works.
But I think you're right in the sense that the more of us that come together to focus our minds in a quantitative collective consciousness, we can imagine our reality into anything.
Well, there's no doubt about that. And, you know, when you were working on Quantum Leap and then you shifted into the books and in those areas as well, there is an overlap there, isn't there?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think that Quantum Leap was unique in its time, and I think there were a lot of shows that emulated it. I don't think anything's come close to it, and I realized that there was so much more to say from it. And the Vision Quest, I actually had the concept for the Vision Quest years before and tried to bring it into Hollywood, I mean 30 years before. And it was before Star Wars. It was before all these other science fiction properties. And I really thought Star Wars nailed it, and the Force and all this other stuff. And then I realized that, and don't get me wrong, George did okay with the Star Wars.
Yeah.
But I really felt like the next level of giving it back to humanity was missed, and I just felt compelled to reach out and find that audience and then reach forward into the Vision Quest and tell that tell that story.
I want to get your take, Deborah, when we come back in just a second, about where you think humanity's going to be in about 10 years from now. Deborah Pratt's website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. It's thevisionquest.com. We'll also take some of your phone calls if you want to talk with her about Quantum Leap and also consciousness on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, Douglas Elwell joins us as we talk about Planet X right here on Coast to Coast AM. When we come back, we'll continue talking about consciousness with Deborah Pratt and take your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. We're with author Deborah Pratt, thevisionquest.com. Deborah, where do you see us all, this planet, in the next 10 years?
That's completely up to the people of this planet, in the sense that we have the choice to really come back into our powers. I really think that there is a harmonic shift that's happening that will lift us up, and the choice to, you know, as Jesus Christ said, do as I do and take your powers back and make some of these things happen. We forget, you know, and I was listening to the interim subjects that you were talking about. We forget how much power we have as a collective, not just consciousness, but mass, in the sense that if we chose one company to not buy from anymore, it would end that company. And if we have an understanding that that company is harming us, we just need to look at the products that they produce and collectively stop purchasing those products. I mean, Martin Luther King did it. We changed the nation. Gandhi did it. He changed the nation. We have that power, and we forget. We sit in fear so deeply. And if we can just kind of shift that vibration, and I'm hoping not just within the next 10 years. I mean, I talk about you talk about your next guest is talking about Planet X. I have a whole section in my book that talks about the history of the world from the point of view of the future of the world and the fact that we as a planet, as a people, got together and what I call pratered, which is a collective meditative energy, and literally bent time and space and moved this planet past us so we were safe.
You know, when Quantum Leap came out, which was in 1989, I think, wasn't it?
Originally, yeah.
You know, it did well. It did well with the good demographics and everything else. And were you surprised at its length? You know, that's pretty good for TV. It lasted, what, 4 or 5 seasons?
Yeah. I mean, I think it could have lasted more, but there was nothing like it on. And here's they moved us 5 times. And
which is ludicrous for a TV show.
You know what? The audience followed us.
They followed you. Yeah.
They followed us. And we started conventions and we got people to come, and the leapers really understood the beauty of the show.
How did the show get conceptualized?
It came from the fact that Don wanted to do an anthology. And I was reading Short History of Time by Stephen Hawking.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about, you know, quantum physics and the fact that one particle could leap and simultaneously be in another place at another time. And we talked about the idea that someone, because time and space is limited, a person couldn't just come in, if you and I were sitting in a room, and be a third person in a room. They would have to move one of us out, and that we keep an energy of how people perceive us in front of us. So I would never necessarily see the truth of the fact that you had been replaced, because I would still see your energy.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it was heavy. Brandon Tartikoff.
It was cutting edge.
It was really deep. And Brandon Tartikoff had us come in like 3 times to pitch the show. And say, okay, now tell it to me like I'm 80, and then tell it to me like I'm 3. But we got it, and we communicated it, and the audience got it, and they came back. And the letters, George, of how the show affected people's lives, it was an honest show. It dealt with true emotions and great thematic storytelling, but more so just human storytelling.
Yeah, it was
and
great.
That, you know, that's what I'm going back to in the Vision Quest, and the fact that we need to recapture our humanity and re-empower ourselves and wake up again, that other 95% of our minds.
If we do it, Deborah, I think it's going to be done by necessity. I don't think the masses will generally do it on their own.
But they're doing it. You were talking about this group in Iran.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's
part of it. Yeah, that is part of it.
And you look at what's happening in this springtime that's happening in the Middle East. People are waking up and saying, enough. And so in 10 years, what if? You know, and this is about our ability to imagine. What if we can imagine a world without money? You don't need money because you have the ability to manifest matter. Who's to say that we can't? I mean, again, Jesus Christ supposedly did it. He took water and turned it into wine. He took 5 loaves of bread and he turned it into 500 loaves.
Well, and we're all supposed to have that ability.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, so if we accept that reality on a mass consciousness, why can't we shift?
We'll take a few calls here with you. Let's go to Portland, Oregon. Eric, welcome to the program. Hi, Eric.
Good evening. Excellent show, as always.
Thank you.
I just wanted to touch on a few things. I agree with everything. I think the 2012 event that's going to be coming up is not going to be a doom and gloom event. However, I think the galactic alignment is going to bring something harmonic, and all the tumblers in the lock are lining up. And the key's going to be able to fit in, and we're finally going to be able to open the door, and you'll be able to get some new listeners out there past Mars, George.
you never know. This conscious awakening, Deborah, mm-hmm. What's doing it? We see it happening, but what's causing it? Frustration?
I think so. We're being repressed so much. But I also think, okay, in this alignment, And one of your guests talked about this. Our planet is actually lifting up above a mass of mess out in the universe. And in lifting up, I think, and connecting through this galactic alignment, and I talk about it in the Vision Quest, we are receiving a different level of energy. And I think we're tuning into it. It's like tuning into your radio show. So as we tune in, we're starting to understand. I mean, time is truly, I think, moving faster. We're gathering information faster. Sometimes I feel like memory almost full, but I think there's so much more that our minds are capable of. So as we line up with the center of the universe, we're going to be collecting the ability to open our minds to things that right now we can't even imagine, but we have to let ourselves stand. And I think it has to be in a place of bliss and love and fearlessness to allow that to come in to say, okay, I can imagine this. And if 7 billion people start imagining this, I don't think we're alone out here. I don't think we were the first people on this planet. But to suddenly see that there's whole communities living on the moon that have been there all that time, but we couldn't see them because we're vibrating so low and living in such fear that we don't have the power to look and see and experience.
What was one of your favorite Quantum Leap episodes, Deborah?
Oh, my goodness.
They were all cool.
They were all cool. You know, I guess one that I wrote, Sam leapt into a 16-year-old pregnant girl. Poor Scott Bakula had to give birth for 3 days. And it was really one of those opportunities, A, for a man to walk in the shoes of a woman, you know, having a child and what's that like. But more important, the relationship between the father and the daughter and the fact that he had wanted her to give up this child and she, through Sam's help, through Al's help, made him realize that this was his family and all it was about was love. And George, we got a letter from a woman who had been in the same situation. And the letter said, I never understood my father's side of the story until I saw your show.
That's great.
And I forgave him.
That is great. What's Scott doing now these days? He was born in St. Louis.
Yes, he was born in St. Louis. He's on a series called Men of a Certain Age.
Okay.
And I think it's doing very well. He's a good actor. He's a great everyman, and you know, hopefully,
and a nice guy.
And a really nice guy, he and Dean Stockwell. They were a pleasure to work with. It was great to go to the set every day and go to work every day. And I hope when I do the Vision Quest movie that I can get them both to work.
That would be nice. Okay, let's go back to the phones. We'll go to Zach. First-time caller, Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hi, Zach.
Hi, George. How are you?
Good. Glad you got through. Go ahead.
Hey, me too, man. I've been listening to your show for about 6 months now. My friend told me to try it out since I'm driving for work now, and it's awesome.
That's a great friend, by the way.
Yeah, he is. I'm not necessarily disagreeing with you. I just have a question.
Sure.
Actually, with your guest about the collective consciousness thing. You know, in the 1300s or before the 1400s, when Columbus sold the world, pretty much the entire population of the world thought the planet was flat, and it's not flat, so I don't know if we all believe something if it does necessarily come true, and I'll just let you guys talk about it with me off the line, so, but thank you.
All right. I guess what he's trying to say, Deborah, too, is that maybe it's not all what we think it is. What's up is down, what's down is up.
Exactly, but I think that we were told... This is not something that we intuitively knew that the world was flat. Somebody made the decision and told other people. So one of the things that we have to do is forget what you have been taught to believe and start to look into your genetic, spiritual, conscious understanding of what is. You know what is good and bad. You know what is right and wrong. Start to imagine the world. I mean, everybody didn't believe that it was flat. Obviously, Christopher Columbus sailed off and said, let me show you another way.
I wonder if he thought he was going to go over the edge.
I don't think so, because he wasn't the first one to do it. Leif Erikson did it before him,
yeah.
And the Moors did it way before any of them.
I think, absolutely. I think that, you know, humans traveled way before Christopher Columbus crossed the ocean.
Exactly. The Africans were way over. When Ponce de Leon came to Florida, the Indians were like shocked to see the blacks represented as slaves, because they had come in as the Moors, as kings, as traded with them. It was the people that wanted people to believe the world was flat, because they didn't want them to go out and expand without them having control over it. Again, it goes back to control and greed and...
As you look at this planet today, and you hear these stories on this program and some other alternative shows about conspiracies and that things aren't what we see, that there's a push for a new world order, a one world government, do you believe that now?
Yeah, and I don't know that it's... Yes, absolutely, I believe that. I think that there are people that want to put chips in our bodies and want us to have a single currency. They want to monopolize the food and the water,
yep,
so that we're helpless. I mean, it's happening. That's happening, which is why we have to make a shift, and we have to start thinking another way, and we have to not allow them. The Earth freely gives us water and air and food and all these other things, and we have so manipulated it into harming us. There are all these cows out here that are just, you know, producing methane gas worse than the cars that are driving.
Sure. And, you know, I'm convinced terrorism, which is real, is created by those groups that want to keep us on edge.
That's right.
And when I say us, I'm talking about us as human beings. And that, you know, the average person doesn't want to go kill somebody, doesn't want to, you know, screw up their lives. You know, they want a nice environment for their family, and they want a nice, peaceful existence. But these other groups out there are out there to disrupt, and I really think they are part of what we call terrorism. It's not just these hate groups that are out there. I think these hate groups are created.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think that it's, again, it's up to us as a society, as a race, to just say, enough. I'm not going to fight you. I'm going to put my gun down. This is what I need right here. This is my land, because the Earth has given it to me. The Anasazi Indians, you know, said you can't own a piece of land. You can live on it. You can grow on it. You can share with your neighbors. We have everything that we need. This is paradise. The Earth produces everything that we need to heal us, and we're the ones that produce the things that harm us.
We're talking with Deborah Pratt. Her latest couple books, The Vision Quest, one coming out in October, Visionary Being One. Her website, of course, you can get all this information, thevisionquest.com. Let's go to Nederland, Colorado. Bruin is with us, west of the Rockies. Hello, Bruin.
Hey, George, it's Brian.
Oh, okay.
But that's okay. And I want to say a big thank you to you and to everybody, all those people that we never hear about. You name them lots, so that's good. But, you know, thanks to everybody, because Coast is a great program. Deborah, I really enjoyed, as many of us did, Quantum Leap and Scott Bakula and Dean Stockwell. You know, both those guys were great, and I was sad to see it go, but we come and we go. And I really agree with a lot of what both you folks are saying, you know, that the vibration, there might be people that we just can't see, and that we ought to, at some point, there's some part of us that could manifest like the Christ did, and that other high teachers have been alleged to have done. So I like all those things. The GMOs scare me, and like George just said, the terrorists are created. I really believe that. I really think that's true. And kudos or whatever that word is to both you and again to everybody that makes Coast happen. Thanks a lot.
All right, great. Any plans for another TV show from you, Deborah?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I'm out pitching one now. My focus has gone to all things related, but because of the Vision Quest, I really want to stay in this creating
this genre.
Yeah, the genre of creating awareness. So I have developed a new show. We're looking right now to. I've just written the first screenplay for the Vision Quest, and
good for you.
Went out last week. So I'm hoping to create that. And within the Vision Quest, there are, you know, 11 games. My ultimate goal, George, which would be really fun, is to create a virtual universe based in this world, have the greatest minds on this planet, like yourself, bring to it all the technology and the science and the great things that already exist on the planet, and create a virtual paradise for ourselves. What would it be like? And start to visualize it. We've got the internet. It connects us globally. What would happen if we built a virtual universe that allowed us to do all the things we're talking about?
I've always wondered what life would be like in Shangri-La.
Yeah, I'm going there.
It would be nice. If any place, at least in your mind, you can go there.
Well, that's the power.
Yeah.
So who's to say that you can't just kind of go all the way? And that's hopefully what we're vibrating to.
Let's go to Florida, Santa Rosa Beach. Hello, John. Take it away. You're on with Deborah Pratt.
Hey, George. How are you doing?
Good, John. Thank you.
Deborah, thanks. You know, I was listening to you. I'm actually a friend of Stan Dale's as well, too, and he's kind of turned me on to some interesting concepts. I was wondering if you guys have thought of the fact that, you know, when we see the energy and everything, when you're talking about perception and reality and things, when we see the energy and the light from other planets or from other stars or even our own sun, it's supposedly either several minutes or even several thousand years old.
That's right, because of the distance.
Right, but what we're actually looking at is something that's already happened. So we're actually already looking at the past, technically.
That's true. Absolutely.
That is true. Right. And there are a number of people who believe that we are living backwards. We've already lived the future, and now we're living backwards into the past.
You believe in the multiverse theory, Deborah?
Very much so, yeah.
That would be fascinating. There's many of us all over the place in bubbles of universes. Deborah, good luck. Deborah Pratt, her website again, thevisionquest.com. Go and take a look at some of the different projects she's working on now and some of her speaking engagements. And I'll be back in just a moment as we talk about Planet X on Coast to Coast AM.